has cleaned house anyways. So we have been discussing Brahma's prayers related to the Brahma Vimohan Leela after Brahma wanting to see the extent of Krishna's power. He challenged his power against Krishna's power and Krishna won. Krishna showed Brahma a series of things. Krishna showed Brahma the exact same replica of the cowherd boys and calves that he had put in the cave. Exact replicas of them were back in the same place where they're having lunch. This is chapter 13 of Canto 10. And then suddenly, those same calves and cowherd boys simultaneously manifested forms of Narayan, each one of them. And then surrounding each form of Narayan was all of his unlimited potencies and all living entities in a universe glorifying him. And then he saw all the universes, multiple universes before him, and then everything disappeared by Krishna's transcendental potency. So following that experience, Brahma offers prayers. And we're up to chapter 14, verses 22, 23, 24 for this evening. It's a little summary of the earlier verses. Just keeping it really simple because of time constraints. Just some appreciation of the Srimad Bhagavatam in general. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Nigama Kalpataram Palam Idam. It's the ripened fruit of all the Vedas. The Vedas are compared to a kalpatru, a desire tree. From a desire tree you can achieve anything. The Vedas provide means to achieve anything. Usually the anything that people want is something temporary. But the ripened fruit of that tree of Vedic wisdom is love of God. So Srimad Bhagavatam delivers that. And Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, a natural commentary by the author himself of Vyasadeva, wrote Vedanta Sutra, then he explained it in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra asks the question, what is the source of everything? Atato Brahma Jigyasu, Jigyasu, inquire, inquisitiveness into the nature of that which is the source of everything. And whatever it is that's the source of everything, that's the absolute truth. So the Bhagavatam is revealing that which is the source of everything is Krishna. The Bhagavatam is disclosing that from the very first verse. And that very first verse is then summarized in four verses. Canto 2, chapter 9, text 33, 4, 35, and 36. Those four verses are the Chatur Shloki verses, the four essential verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, or the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion of those four verses. Everything rests upon those four. And those four were spoken by Lord Vishnu to Lord Brahma. So Brahma is now explaining those verses in his prayers. And he's going back, we already discussed this, but this is a little review. In the earlier verses before this evening's verses, he was asking, in the form of asking questions, he was giving an answer to why it was, Brahma's asking, why when I went climb down the stem of the lotus, I couldn't see your form, the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu from which the lotus came, why I could not see your form, and now I can see your form. Not only that form, but your original form from which all expansions come. Why I couldn't see. And why I was in trance of meditation after austerities for thousands of years, and then I saw your form, and then that form was gone, and now he's here. So he's, in short, he is speaking truths about the absolute truth, or a deeper penetrating understanding of the absolute truth. So it gets a little philosophical, or more than a little philosophical, it gets really philosophical. So, why? I mean, do we really need philosophy in order to awaken our love of God, supposing you're not philosophical? Supposing you're just a very simple person, you like sweeping the floor in the temple room, or you like cooking for Krishna, that you don't need to know lots of philosophy. Just make nice things for Krishna. So, is it necessary? Well, Bhagavatam is everything. Krishna is everything. Within Krishna is everything. And the picture of reality with a capital R, the picture of the absolute truth with a capital T, has details. And there are persons that are inquisitive by nature to know those details. So here they are. If one is so inclined, here they are, because within the Bhagavatam is Krishna, and Krishna is everything. So there's a philosophical explanation. And Vedic culture rests not just on philosophy. Philosophy has an application. That is, from Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo atak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. That's the first verse of the four essential verses of Bhagavad Gita. When you know that which is the source of everything, you serve, because you're part of everything and everything is meant for service. So now, supposing you don't have that picture, then you have another picture of reality. The picture of reality is, well, just putting it in blunt terms, atheism. Or, put it a little softer, as materialism. That materialism says, it's up for grabs. I want to make it mine. And that person over there wants to make it his, and so we tussle. Then there's groups of people, and then you have conflicts, and you have war, and you have dissension amongst men, instead of a God-centered picture. So what's the God-centered picture must include everything belongs to God. So how do you, that's a nice notion, but is that really the way it is? So this explanation of Brahma is addressing yes. So then comes the philosophical question that arises throughout his prayers. Krishna is the source of everything. Then what about this place? I mean, not just this house or the village of Naperville or, you know, what's real? It's explored. What's real, what's not real? So we've been hearing, for example, Brahma saying, this world in which we are, is it real? And when I'm seeing, what I saw, these cowherd boys and calves and the forms of Vishnu and the universes, that was real. But what about this world around us? Is that as real as that was real? And what Mother Jasoda saw inside Krishna's mouth, was that real? Because she saw like what I saw. She saw everything within Krishna's mouth, and I saw everything just out in front of us just a few minutes ago. Was that real? And is the world where we are now, with all that's gone, is the world around it? So it's a philosophical search or inquiry. What's real? And we're going to be hearing this evening's verses more on that topic, and it comes up again more on that topic, and it comes up again more on that topic. And like, I'll stop this preamble, but we're going to be, before I finish this section, Brahma's prayers, we're going to touch on the topic of the universal form. And if you want a mystery, there's one. What's the universal form? Is it real? Or is it imaginary? And we'll go there later. Like, anyone seen a mountain that's shaped like a cone where the thin part is at the bottom and the broad part at the top and it's flat? And it's 800,000 miles tall? Anyone seen a mountain and it's all gold? Anyone seen such a thing? And that's part of Bhumandala, part of Jambadweep, it's part of the universal form. So what is it? Is it gibberish? Or etc.? How do we understand the universal form? So we're going to be touching on that because it comes up in Brahma's prayers. This is a philosophical foundation of how we see the world around us. Because how we see the world around us has a profound influence in how you see yourself and how you see God, who is the owner of the world around us. So we'll be touching on that topic in these verses, but that's part of the reason why there is this philosophy, is somebody can say, I believe in God, and that's like business done. So what's the relationship between God and the fence out there, or the trees out there, or the universe? Because God is eternal and true, and here comes this temporary thing that's full of pain and misery, and so how did this place come from God? Because there's questions that arise in the course of mankind's searching mind, that Brahma's, he's the most intelligent being in the whole universe, and he's puzzled. So what to speak of us? And so that part of the keys to the puzzlement, one, we won't be able to understand except through devotional service, that's in his prayers. And the way to see the universe as truth is that it's from the supreme truth, so it has to be true. But it appears to us to be something other than what it is. So there's examples, a dream or a mirage. We're going to hear from the commentary the horn of a rabbit. There's horns and there's rabbits, but there's no horn of a rabbit. In Sanskrit, pushpa akash, flowers in the sky. There's flowers and there's sky, but there's not flowers in the sky. A mirage, water in a desert, there's water, and there's a mirage. It looks like it. So, what is this? It's a reality check. And it's paraphernalia. It's right now, so this is connecting Bhagavatam 2.9.31. You can look it up later. It's Vishnu speaking to Brahma before he reveals the essential verses that's the basis of the whole of the Bhagavatam. Sarahasyam tadangam cha. Tadanga means paraphernalia, just like there's a table and chairs. That's household paraphernalia. And it can be seen as mine, or it can be seen as tadangam. It's paraphernalia meant for the service to Krishna, the source of the table and chairs. And if one sees it that way, That's a different worldview than seeing without a God-centered view. The God-centered view requires philosophy. And to have that proper philosophy realized, it requires devotional service. So this is taking that, the Bhagavatam is taking God-centered life and expanding it, then putting it back together again. I like visual things. Probably all of us here have made giwiks. Giwik is two things, cotton and ghee. And you take a little bit of cotton and you turn it, put in a little bit of ghee, not too much, and you turn it and turn it and turn it and makes it tight and it makes a giwik. But you go back the other direction, there's a ball of cotton, and you can take the ball of cotton and start pulling the ball of cotton apart. And what is it? It's just little fibers. So these verses are like little fibers that have a purpose. When you put them all together and put them in ghee and delight it, then you can offer it to Krishna and you have a ghee lamp. It's a philosophical explanation with little strands. When put together properly, it's the picture of the absolute truth. Then everything comes from the absolute truth. That's tadangam. It's paraphernalia. This universe, seen as paraphernalia, connected from the supreme truth, offer it to the supreme truth. Then it becomes a spiritual place. Spiritual simply means remembrance of God and offering things to him. And material means not remembering God and not offering things to him, seeing them separate from him. It's a different worldview. And worldview has a philosophy supporting it. Spiritual worldview. That's what Brahma is giving us in these prayers. So get ready for some philosophy. So yesterday we covered a few things. One was Brahma was saying, previously he had spoken about the universe, and yesterday's verses he spoke about the avatars. Two of the six types of avatars include the guna avatars, those that oversee the gunas. Vishnu oversees goodness. Brahma oversees passion. Lord Shiva oversees ignorance. And each of those have a function. Creation, maintenance, destruction. And Brahma is saying, I'm one of them, but we're just expansions from you. And then he speaks of the Leela avatars that make their appearance in the demigods and aquatics and animals and humans and demigods. So Leela avatars make their appearance in different ways. So, but you, looking at Krishna standing before him in Vrindavan, you're the source of all of them. You're the source of me. You're the source of the universes. You're the sources of forms of the Lord that appear within the universe. And then he concludes by saying, the way in which you exhibit your spiritual potencies is no one can understand. Now he understands because there's some disclosure to him back in Canto 2, Chapter 9. The same, there's a connection between the two, but Brahma and Brahma. And Brahma is now explaining what he's understood, that there are potencies that are beyond the mind to conceive of, but one can get an understanding of them to the degree that one has devotion and the Lord reveals himself through devotion. And he selectively reveals himself through devotion to his devotees because they're confidential persons. Like, we don't just disclose everything about everything to anybody. We disclose to confidential persons confidential things. It's natural. Where do we get that? It's Krishna does. That tendency is in Krishna. So Brahma is stating for us, ordinary people can't understand these things because the spiritual potencies are unlimited and inconceivable, and he's inconceivable. Now he's going to, in these verses, describe the inconceivable. Starting with text 22 through 24. translation. Therefore, it starts tasmat. Therefore. So it's kind of a summary of what's been said in the, from the previous verses. Therefore, this entire universe, the one that he was looking around, the entire universe, which is like a dream, which is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real. And thus it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. So he's already spoken about forms of him, the previous avatar descriptions. It was stated there that how are we going to understand this if we don't have the standard of reality? So when he appears to give us that, the standard of reality, and in contrast, there's what's over here, the temporary. Now, I'm going to summarize what there's maybe 15, 16 pages of commentary, so I'm not going to read it all. But it's an important section because it's what's reality, what's illusion. This universe appears to be real because it's from the real. That's like what Mother Jasoda saw within Krishna was real because it's within Krishna. But it's temporary, and in that sense, like now you see it, now you don't. Temporary, although it may last for a long time, it's temporary, and there the form of that manifestation, the energy, prakriti, isn't temporary, but the form is temporary, and so it's called not real, like a dream, because a dream is over and it's over. So even when you're dreaming, it's not reality. Similarly, the awake condition is also not reality because it's also going to be over. And the universe is going to, in that sense, it's all temporary and therefore asat, not real. And sat is Krishna. He's the standard. He's the gold standard of Om Tat Sat or Satchit Ananda Vigraha. And then he expands his maya potency so it looks like that's it. And there isn't anything else, then you become a materialist and God doesn't exist and everything's up for grabs. And you try to, during your lifetime, accumulate as much as it's realistic for you to accumulate. The maniac mentality described in Bhagavad Gita, so much is mine, I'm going to make more mine. And I've got some enemies and I'm going to do away with my enemies. Material consciousness. And then there's, so, here's a two-paragraph purport from Prabhupada's BBT publication. So he's going to make both arguments, real and not real. First, as an object of enjoyment or a permanent residence for the conditioned soul, the material universe is certainly illusion. It's not an object for enjoyment, and it's not a permanent place. It's certainly an illusion, nothing more than a dream. One may give up, may give the analogy that the vision of abundant water in a desert is no more than a dream, although real water exists elsewhere. Similarly, the vision of home, happiness, and reality within matter is certainly no better than a foolish dream in which repeated miseries appear. Paragraph. In another sense, however, the universe is real. Then comes the authoritative statement. Madhvacharya, you know, Dvaitavad. And one of the realities on this Dvaita is Prakriti. It's real. In our Bhagavad Gita explanation, there are five topics, and four of them are eternal, and one of them is Prakriti. So it's real. It's real. In his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Madhvacharya has confirmed that it's real, the universe is real, by quoting the following statement from Vedic Shruti Mantras. And the Vedic Shruti Mantra is short. Satyam Yevedam Vishvam Asrajat Asrajata. Translation, this universe created by the Lord is real. The verse says it's not real, then it's real. The perfect authority of the Vedas, Madhvacharya, thus certifies this universe is real. Semicolon. Nevertheless, because our knowledge is stolen by illusion, as indicated in this verse by Asta Dishanam, we cannot properly understand this universe or the Supreme Lord who has created it. As the expansion of Lord Krishna, the universe is real and is meant to be engaged in his service. So the final statement covers the whole topic. One who accepts the kingdom of God as home, the Lord himself as the object of love, and the material universe as paraphernalia for being engaged in the Lord's service, dwells within eternal reality wherever he may go within the material or spiritual worlds. Tadangam. Sarahasyam tadangam cha. From this canto 2, chapter 9, verse. The Lord speaking to Brahma. There's a mystery about me. The mystery can be understood through devotional service and the paraphernalia needed for that devotional service. The universe is part of the paraphernalia of devotional service. That's when it's seen where it's real, like the table and chair. It's paraphernalia to be used in the Lord's service, and that's reality. And supposing I see it as an object of enjoyment, then that's illusion. But, you know, that's how most people live their lives, because we're conditioned. So to move from, that's why this, it wavers between reality and illusion. What this universe is. It has to be seen properly. Through this, then the mystery is solved. What is it? It's paraphernalia for service to the Lord. And this other, one who accepts the kingdom of God as home. I want to tell a little story, if you don't mind. Just like lighten up the philosophy atmosphere for a moment. During this past Kartik month, a group of us went to, Nasik and Hampi to visit places where Lord Ramachandra performed his pastimes, the Aranya Kanda and Kishkinda Kanda section of Ramayana. It was a nice experience, the katha and visiting the places where the pastimes occurred and so forth, that very nice experience. So the sharing is, there were about, I don't know, some number of 20 or some number of devotees from China that were with us. They don't yet have Ramayana in Chinese. So they knew nothing about Lord Ramachandra and his pastime. So it was like new. Totally new. And some of them had never been to India. And so it was like new. So at the end, after our Yatra was over, I had a little gathering with the Chinese devotees, and I asked them what their experience was. And a very significant statement was made by one of them. A young woman, maybe in her mid-20s, something like that. High energy. You know, she said it in Chinese, so it was translated. She said, these were my favorite experiences and favorite places and so on. Then she said, in China, we are taught to be very nationalistic. And coming here and all this experience that I've had, my main heartfelt feeling is, I want to find my real home. I mean, it's stuck. It's really powerful because the material conception is, this is my home. And the people around you support, this is my home. Like, you know, I'm American and you're Indian and she's Chinese and that's who we are. We're this body, the covering. But that's who we are. And as a fundamental, I've now watching for the third time this Yadubar film. Have you seen? It's available. You can watch it online. It was marketed for a while, but now it's available for just viewing online, YouTube thing. And there's twice in the film, it's an hour and a half long, there's this expression of Bhaktisiddhanta's mission and then Prabhupada explaining his mission. And twice it's being said to know who you are. And we're not the body. It's like Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. But perhaps to bring things to the stage where people realize that, it's more than just notional. It's more than philosophy. If the philosophy is there, chapter 2. But to get that realization. So here's this young girl, young woman. I want to find my real home. And that's the beginning of God consciousness. You have to disconnect from what you think is your home or disconnect with what you think is yourself to understand who you really are. You can't understand who you really are if you hold on to a misconception of who you are. And it's really who you aren't. Anyway, that's how to see the universe in which we're situated. It's tadangam. It's paraphernalia of the Lord's service. It's an opportunity to engage in service to Him. And I'm just going to read a short section from Jiva Goswami's commentary. Brahma speaking like this. Since you are the cause of everything, the universe, which is part of everything, it arises from Maya, material elements, and merges into them, taking shelter of you. It appears like your swarup or your eternal abode. That's Maya. Because of the substantial existence of spiritual things related to you, the universe takes on substantiality to some degree. It appears to be real. Just by being your energy, Maya has real existence. I mean, Maya means illusion. Illusion has real existence. The appearance of the mirage, there is something. It's not water. That is something. It appears to be water, but it's not water, but it's something. It's the reflection of sun on sand. That's what it is. And it appears to be. But being devoid of spiritual qualities, it is like an unreal entity, comma, a horn of a rabbit. Though Maya is non-different from you, lacking your presence, it is like a dream, since it is not permanent. Gives them Sanskrit. The ideas in the waking state are not like those of the dream state, since they are of a different nature. That's a Vedanta Sutra text. But it appears to be real and gives great suffering. It arises from your swarup, which is filled with eternal knowledge and happiness, defined as the Parabrahman. So it's a mystery. How does temporary come from the eternal? How does non-truth come from truth? It's a mystery. It appears to be because it has that substantiality factor. So now I'm flipping forward through so many pages of commentary. Just one sentence from Sanatana Goswami. The Lord is without destruction. He is eternal. The asat world seems eternal because of relationship with the sat. Same message, just expressed in different language. Again, this is what's real. Is this universe real? Am I real? It's what's so. Text 23. You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifested, endless, and beginningless. These are all kinds of qualities. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. We know that designation word is upadi. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam. You know the verse? Tat paratvena nirmalam. There's a definition in Narada's writings. One of the core definitions of bhakti is that one. Sarva upadi vinirmuktam. So upadi means designation, like I'm a sannyasi. That's a designation. It's not who I am. Or you're a grihastha. That's not who you are. I mean, that's an ashram in which you're situated, and this is when I'm a man, and someone's a boy, and someone's a girl, and someone's a woman, and those are designations. Upadis. I'm black, I'm white, I'm brown, I'm pink, orange. So those are designations, not who we are. So Krishna, his statement is, he has no upadis, no material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. So we've been a number of times. We'll do it one more time, I think, tomorrow. There's a little recording of a narration, a summary narration of verses 15 through 29. So these are points that are made. And it's like, when we play it again, having gone through this slowly, it's going to have even more impact. So, indestructible nectar of immortality. That's who Krishna is. And Brahma is expressing or exposing or sharing. This is God. And why he's so lovable. Because he's all these lovable things within him. Here's short purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains how the various terms of this verse demonstrate that the transcendental body of Lord Krishna is free from the characteristics of material bodies. I won't go through it all. His form is all spiritual, our material forms are not. He's Bhagavan and we're Jiva. There's a distinction between Bhagavan and Jiva. Materialists don't understand that there is such a distinction, because he appears in this world. In this little hour and a half video, you provide them with the link so they can view it. In the 60s, somebody at 26 Second Avenue is asking Prabhupada, who is Krishna? He's specific to the audience. He says, he pauses, he's a historical person. And people would think of him as worldly, but he's not. He's God, and he has a spiritual form, etc., etc. So this whole section is helping people who don't have proper knowledge of God get proper knowledge of God. There's people that just don't know. There are different categories of faithless people. One of them is they just don't know. Some people are antagonistic. Don't tell me. Some people know and just ignore it. But Brahma is giving factual knowledge of the person worthy of our surrender. In other words, final paragraph, Lord Krishna's transcendental body is free from the transformations of material bodies. The Lord does, however, create innumerable worlds and expand himself as innumerable living entities. But the Lord's so-called reproduction is completely spiritual and does not take place at certain phases of bodily existence. Rather, it constitutes the Lord's eternal proclivity to expand his spiritual bliss and glories. And then concluding, as the Lord states in the Shruti, Purvam, Evaham, Ihasam, I alone existed in the beginning. Sound familiar? This is the first of the four essential verses of the Bhagavatam is now making its way here. Aham Evasam Evagre is how the Sanskrit begins. You can look it up later. 2.9.33. Aham Evasam Evagre. Vishnu is saying to Brahma, before creation, I alone exist. During cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After cosmic annihilation, I alone exist. So, what's this? Well, it's the manifestation of Krishna. The table and chair, it's his inferior potency, but it's his potency, it's his manifestation. It's his. Or that which is his, in one sense, is him. But the table and chair is not the source of everything, so there's a distinction. But it's his. Meant to be used, paraphernalia, meant to be used in his service. So, as it's stated in the Bhagavatam, here it's right in the Shruti mantras, I alone existed in the beginning. Therefore, here in this verse, the Lord is called Purusha Puranaha, the primeval enjoyer. The original Purusha expands himself, Krishna expands himself as the Supersoul and enters every living being. Still, he is ultimately the Absolute Truth, Krishna. The Absolute Truth quotes the Upanishads, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. The Absolute Truth himself is Govinda, who has an eternal form of bliss and knowledge and who is sitting beneath a shady tree in Vrindavan, desire tree. This Absolute Truth is beyond material. This is the summation. This Absolute Truth, Krishna, the person standing before Lord Brahma just now, is beyond material ignorance and beyond even ordinary spiritual knowledge. Thus, in many ways, the supremacy of Lord Krishna has been established in the Vedic literature, and it is here confirmed by Lord Brahma. So this is expanding a description of the Absolute Truth. What is the Absolute Truth? That from which everything comes. Vedanta Sutra. That from which everything comes. And Krishna is that from which everything comes. And his existence is beyond the temporary. It's beyond designations. It's beyond ignorance. Beyond touch with matter. And so forth. Giving us a very real picture of Krishna who's standing before Brahma. I'm going to try to wrap this up. This is one more commentary on text 23. Jiva Goswami writes, Here Brahma is summarizing an intermediate topic. So going back to prior topic, since you are the cause of Narayana, stated earlier in this chapter, verse 14, and you are one alone, text 18 of this chapter, standing with yogurt rice in your hand, you are the basis of all material and spiritual manifestations. That's the summation. And a bridge into the next set of topics. And again, there's, our acharyas have pages and pages of commentary. Now we're going to text 24 and we'll wrap up. Those who have received the clear vision of knowledge from the sun-like spiritual master can see you in this way as the very soul of all souls, the super soul in everyone's own self. Thus, understanding your original personality, they are able to cross over the ocean of illusory material existence, because this whole topic has been what's reality and what's illusion. He's going to speak about it some more in coming verses. But to cross over the ocean of illusion so you can enter into the realm of reality, it requires teachings from a qualified teacher to engage one properly in devotional service and see tarangam, see paraphernalia as what it's meant to be used in Krishna's service. And something that can't be used in Krishna's service, you leave it over there. Somebody asked a question, Somebody asked a question the other day during the same topic about the pandemic and how to relate, if we're to relate everything to Krishna, how to relate pandemic to Krishna. And one of our ISKCON sannyasis, he's based in Hungary. In English, he made a little video clip of expressing how we relate properly to animals and the other species than human. And he went, you know, was quick. But this pandemic arises from animals, you know, bats or rats or something. And, you know, people eating them, and they're carrying a virus, and then they spread the virus because the animals have, their immune system has accustomed themselves, they can live without dying with that disease, and people eat the animal. And then, you know, listing so many other epidemics that came in previous periods of time, the swine disease and SARS and this and that, and the other thing, can come from man's not properly interacting with animals. So, it's a lesson. And some people don't learn lessons. They keep doing the same foolish things again and again. But those that are wise learn lessons. And, you know, so animals are not there as objects for our enjoyment. They're there for protection, and they have a right to live, and we don't have the right to exploit their right to live. And some people don't understand that, and they contract and then spread a disease. Because people are not seeing the God-centered way of life. And there's a lot of people that don't have a God-centered way of life, and it's creates problems. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. Yeah.
I have a question regarding the pandemic.
Go ahead.
Pandemic and the meat eating. Okay. Most of my co-workers, they eat meat. And we had a discussion about this other day, last week.
Uh-huh.
And of course, some of them have Indian background and different things. And when I was talking to them about different, I mean, I always discuss with them about what I know and learn from ISKCON with them time to time, whenever I have time. So I had talked with them about that different things like anger and everything else, cheating things comes from Krishna because he has it comes to us.
Yeah.
So long story short, we were discussing last week about meat eating. So the guy asked me that, how do we get tendency of eating meat? If we are vegetarian, we think that's what God preaches us. So where do we get tendency to eat the meat?
And you wanted to know how is it way you can reply to your friend?
Yes, yes.
Well, depends on what your friend is able to understand how you reply. One way to reply, very simply, is modes of nature. According to Bhagavad Gita, persons in this mode, they like these foods. Persons in that mode, they like those foods. And persons in the other mode, they like another food. The tendency comes from the modes of nature. And if one has a lower mode, then one is likely to go in a downward direction. Like animals like meat, and if we have an animalistic life that's unregulated, unrestricted by higher consciousness principles of life, then we're going to be inclined that way, and we're going to go that way in our next life. I mean, that's, you know, take it another step. If one is inclined to eat meat, then your body's more suited for that than animal, the human form. You glide down to the lower species. But it's modes of nature impelled.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, that explained clearly to me. And then other question is related. So I manage a team of 40 people, and every month we have a monthly meeting, and then we have a weekly meeting. So, of course, I'm in charge of the department, so we have to order food, and everything we order is non-vegetarian. And I have to be approved. It all goes on my credit card. And sometimes I feel guilty about buying food for my team. So how do I handle or address? I asked one of my supervisor to, I bought him a credit card so he can buy, but at the end of the day, he still come to me for approval. I have to still approve his expense report.
I don't know about your team, but I would recommend making your best effort to find another alternative. Like, hey guys, I'm gonna entice you. I'm gonna bring from home once a week, every Wednesday, something that's like different, and see if you like it. And if you like it, next time we have a get-together, guess what? We'll do a whole catering thing. We'll bring a whole bunch of this kind of stuff. So get them inclined or hooked on the taste of prasadam. And then you just replace that with prasadam. You know, get devotees or catering or something. Find some way. And then you have your get-together and it's prasadam. And, you know, it's just, you know, I'm different. I'm from an Indian family. We like these kinds of foods. And, you know, if you want, there's some spiritual significance to us for the procedure. Or, you know, you don't even have to go there, just vegetarian. And, you know, but, you know, get them. I've had devotees in workplaces say, you know, on Tuesday or Wednesday, people are, what you got this week?
Because their wife is a good cook and they bring really, you know,
thoughtful items that Western palate can appreciate, not just straight Indian items that are foreign to them, but something that's nicely prepared, and they really look forward to it. They become spiritualized, you know, habituated. Anyway, that's one approach.
Yeah, and I do that, and they love Indian food. And we used to manage Krishna lunch, and I used to take Krishna lunch almost every week.
Good.
But yeah.
I'm just suggesting a creative approach, and supposing it doesn't fly for whatever the reason, then you have to accept responsibility for the decisions you make, and it's better if someone else pays and you approve than if you pay. But still, there's bondage for that act. But what are you going to do? You know, you could put your foot down and say, you know, I'm not going to do it. I'll accept the consequences, but I'm not going to do it. Or just say, look, I mean, this is another out of the menu choice, saying my personal convictions of life are, It creates against my sensibilities. You know, in the world today, people respect somebody that lives by principles, and this is a principle that's just a principle in my life. It's just, it's like I'm not comfortable. So when we do have our occasional, please humor me. I'll try to make it really nice. It doesn't have to be homemade. It can be whatever you guys want, but please honor my sensibilities. And I don't know what kind of response you're going to get, but those are just some options. Catering is like a real good one. Commonly in America, people go to all kinds of places for eating out just to experience something different. I don't know why they do it, but it's like, it's all over the place. It's obvious people do it. This and that, and the other and the other and the other and the other and the other. Just taste something different. So, not easy. Not easy. Living in the mature world. How are we doing? Anybody else want to bring up a topic? You have something?
This is from Radha Kunja Bihari Prabhu. His first question is, how do I shed my upadis? Is aspiring to be quote-unquote devotee also an upadi?
No. A spiritual conception is not a designation. It's who we are. Devotee means engaged in service to the Supreme Lord. That's a devotee. That's who we are. Now, the first part of the question is, how do we address our upadis?
How do I shed my upadis?
Shed. Well, you act within your nature, knowing that it's not who you are. Let's say, you know, you're a man. So, and you're a father. And your husband. So that's not who you are, but you act within that capacity, and that's, you know, how you shed is you spiritualize the covering and engage in strong devotional practice, sadhana bhakti, and gradually you may continue in the mature stage where the upadis are shed, but you're still functioning according to norms of society within theistic conduct. But dedicated to Krishna service. Gradual shedding, that's the message. How do you go? Yeah.
There's one more question from Radha Kunj Bihari Prabhu. Is the universal form transient?
Does what?
Is the universal form transient?
Yeah. Now you see it, now you don't. The universe comes and goes, the universal form comes and goes, but it is a form. It's one of Krishna's forms. So it's not a false form, it's just transient. Transient in the sense of now you see it, now you don't. Temporary. In that sense. That's it. You have anything? Wang Sidari? Okay.
So Radha's question. Some of
this is a girl that's 7 years old, or six or seven.
Some of my friends argue that coronavirus is from bats, but it's okay to eat other animals, and their pain while killing an animal is just for 1 second. How can I respond to them, as they justify that they can still eat meat?
I heard, I think that's in Shivram Maharaj's little video, that it is said that the coronavirus started from bats. Now, I don't know if it's verified or not, but it's said. So now, I don't get who her question is.
Her question is, the friends are arguing that then eating other animals are fine. And also...
Why? Why is it fine?
Because the virus is not spreading through other ones.
Okay, but because the virus is not spreading, it's fine. That's the argument. She wants to know how to reply?
And also, the second argument that they have is, when killing animals, they go through the pain only for a second.
They go through pain for only a second.
Yeah, so they're killed already. So.
Well, that one's easily addressed. Supposing we kill you, and it's only for a second. If that principle is to hold, where do you draw the line? Because it's fast, and then we eat you. And you know, so what's wrong with that? Do we draw a line? Do we don't eat people? So why we don't eat people? If that's the principle, it's very one moment and it's over. Then why not people? Well, we say no, we can't do that. That's cannibalistic. So then we're drawing a line because there's something that's meant that's edible and something that's not. So what's the line? I mean, it's my group. Is it groupism? Is that what's the line? So. From a compassionate picture, although the pain is only one moment, we don't have the right to take the life and put them in pain. Rather, it's our function to give protection to those who are less matured. Here's two boys, and well, you know, they're young. So, you know, they're not feeling the same things I'm feeling, so they're expendable. We wouldn't consider. So if it's life of lower species, they're less advanced, they're not expendable. The logic is they're to be protected. Those who are less are to be extended protection, not death. Well, it's just a one moment death. We don't have that right. It's an ethical argument. And the same with it, well, they don't distribute coronavirus, so it's okay. Well, that doesn't make it okay. So, you know, your classmates, they don't distribute coronavirus, so they're edible too. So what's the logic of that? It's mind is compassion. What are principles that we should live by? Anyway.
There's Rohini Nandan Prabhu's question. Devotees are also suffering as a result of this pandemic. Can we look at one of the reasons being due to devotees not doing enough to spread Krishna consciousness?
I saw you smiling when you were reading. Well, those that are suffering are going to be able to spread Krishna consciousness even less than they were before. So I don't think that's a very logical explanation or reason why they were suffering, because they didn't do it enough, so now they're going to do it less because they're suffering. Prabhupada was asked a question. Supposing two people are exposed to some illness, one contracts the illness or disease and the other does not, is it a karmic factor that causes one and not the other? That was the question. And Prabhupada's answer was, when one's resistance is strong, one will not contract the disease, and when resistance is weak, one will contract the disease. I mean, that's a medical, but it's not just a medical answer, it's a practical answer. We, as individuals, need to be strong, and then when we're strong, we can face obstacles, whatever it is, coronavirus or others, obstacles with protection when we're strong. So the main thing is to be strong is to be connected in with a spiritual connection to Krishna. And the more we can be in that spiritual connection with Krishna, we'll be able to resist obstacles and difficulties or not succumb to them.
There's another question from Radha Kunjibihari Prabhu. His question is, the material world or universe is like paraphernalia for the Lord, tadangam, to be used in devotional service to the Lord.
Yeah.
How do I adopt this in practice?
Well, you have table and chair, and you see them and engage with them in that consciousness. You cultivate that consciousness and then think of other things. Your house or your bank balance or your car or your computer or your family members, and they're to be engaged in Krishna service. And you do so in, you know, an appropriate manner, each item. And you cultivate that and do good sadhana. It'll help you too.
Kasturi Manjari Mataji's question. Lord Brahma in second canto, is this the same Lord Brahma who is talking in 10th canto, or are they two different days and different Brahmas?
Well, each day is just, it's not expressed, the answer is. For example, in the Brahma that's speaking in Brahma Samhita is a different Brahma than the one that's in canto 2. And the basis of saying that is, in Canto 2, the relationship with that Brahma is friendship. Because the Lord stands and shakes his hand, or extends his hand to shake hands. It wasn't a pandemic situation, they could shake hands. And in Brahma Samhita, that Brahma has a relationship of conjugal relation. He's an eternal maidservant of Krishna. So that's two different Brahmas. But Canto 10, Canto 2, there's no indication one way or the other.
And this is Vrajeshwari Pran Mataji's question. Even though we hear so many times that the world is real but illusory, and so it is our perception, but it's very difficult to overcome Maya, yeah, on a day-to-day life.
Yes.
Except while hearing and reading scriptures.
Yeah.
How to perceive the world is Maya, always an act on the platform.
Read scriptures more. And it will gradually cleanse and purify, and that will be your experience and realization.
Leleshwari Mataji's question. In this material world, everything is paraphernalia for serving the Lord. what do we do in certain situations when people around us make you emotional, like angry, sad and agitated? How to understand and serve at that moment?
Understand who you are and let go of that negative emotion. I mean, you know, that's gradual, but they're not making you do anything. Your conditioning is being invoked or provoked by the circumstance, so that it's not them, it's you. So recognize that it's the contaminated consciousness condition that you're carrying or that we're carrying that causes those emotions. We're responsible for our emotions, but we're not our emotions. And you detach yourself from the emotion and carry on in Krishna consciousness. At least you move in that direction.
Yes, Damodar Vilas Prabhu's question.
Technology's pretty interesting, huh? There's nobody in the room and there's all these people in the room. Is it reality or illusion? Go ahead.
How to develop art of remaining internally disciplined while externally relaxed to others?
We had this discussion going back the other day. When we're extending ourselves to others, we may find ourselves becoming compromised by being a little bit relaxed around others who aren't, you know, fixed in devotion. And we may become conditioned by that relaxed complacency kind of mode. So the question, if, as I've understood it correctly, is how can we simultaneously extend and be relaxed while at the same time being internally, you know, cracked or straight? So the answer I gave before was it's a strong sense of connection. When you have a strong sense of connection, you can act appropriately to the circumstance and still be true to who you are because you have a strong spiritual connection. Again, this nice movie, it's a really good movie, the story of Prabhupada's life. There's a section where he shows he's dancing with the hippies in Haight-Ashbury and Hippie Park and Golden Gate Park. So they didn't see him, the young people didn't see him as like an old fellow, although he was certainly old. He was just like one of them. Although he was not one of them, he was a transcendentalist and a Vaishnav and a polished, cultured gentleman, a learned senior citizen, but he was dancing and as if he was one of them, and they weren't comfortable and he wasn't uncomfortable. Because of his strong connection with his mission and his relation with his spiritual master in Krishna, that was his internal compactness was retained because of that connection. Okay.
There are more questions.
More questions. Okay.
Mahendri Mataji is asking, this question is a little along the previous answer that you gave about resistance. What is the importance of Vedangas like Ayurveda and Yoga and astrology, and do they help in furthering our Krishna consciousness?
Do they have a place?
Do they help in furthering our Krishna consciousness?
They help in furthering? Well, Prabhupada gave much more weight to Ayurveda than astrology. And astrology can be a diversion. And Ayurveda can be something that not if we have good health, then good health can help us in our Krishna consciousness. So we need health in order to engage in service. Okay.
Then Vishalaksha Prabhu's question. What are the steps that need to be taken to develop the deep compassion of Srila Prabhupada and share to others?
Well, watch the video a lot. Read the biographies about his life a lot. Read his books a lot and understand, you'll get the mood of his compassion, because it's there in his writings. Hear the recorded lectures, view the recorded videos, and his intensity of care and concern and affection for others is contagious. It's very strong by his association. Yeah.
Prakash Narayan Govindan Prabhu is asking, Lord Chaitanya's movement is a preaching movement. Sadhana is our top priority to sustain ourselves. However, isn't preaching and outreach to the non-devotee world the next priority over everything else? I ask because that is my priority in life, and the devotees seem to indicate that it's not right.
Uh-oh. we're all individual. That's good news. And for some people, deity worship is the most important part of their life. And for some people, preaching Krishna consciousness is the most important part of their life. And so for some people, going more deeply into japa and kirtan, most important part. Some people is diving deeply into the teachings of bhakti that Prabhupada has given or acharyas have given. It's the most important part of their life. So different things for different people. Some people establishing self-sufficient agriculture is the most important part of their life. Some persons being teachers to children in schools, that's the most important part of their life. So allow that different people have different emphasis. That something that Prabhupada wanted to see is that everyone take up this family business, he called it, so that, you know, people in India know what a family business is, and a family business is something everybody does because it's a family business. So the printing and distributing of books is a family business. It can be one's singular, exclusive occupation, but something, supposing somebody likes deity worship. So it's recommended by our founder, Acharya. They also engage in book distribution as a family business. I mean, so allow for individuality and diversity. And as far as, you know, this is the most important activity, there's so many most important activities at the same time. Huh?
There are more questions.
I think we're gonna have to take one, I'll take one more and then we're gonna close.
The Sri Hari Rajeshwari Pranamataji's son, what will it feel like in spiritual world without illusion?
Without illusion?
What will it feel like?
We'll have to wait and see. We can only imagine what it will be like. What would it feel like? Let's do another one. We're going to take the children's questions as the top of the list.
This is Anirudh, the younger one. Dronacharya likes Arjuna more than others, but why he took Kaurava's side? Off topic.
Mahabharat question. Dronacharya
likes Arjuna more than others, but why did he take Kaurava's side while the war is going on?
The answer that question was asked of both Bhishma Dev and Drona, and their answer in Mahabharata was, we felt obliged because we were being maintained. Now it's not just social, it's a dharmic principle. You're maintained and you have some obligation unto those who maintain you. So they went with that one. Because it was a dharmic principle, it was the wrong choice, but that was the reason. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks, even they're avaricious. Yeah, that avaricious means greed. And because they were being maintained, they did what they did. But it wasn't by greed. Arjuna says, actually, even though they're my superiors. So, because they're being maintained, they felt obliged to those who were maintaining them. Yeah, these children's questions.
There is Amrita Keli Mataji's question. This is pandemic. During this pandemic time, we have to be careful and take necessary measures. But if there is a need for us to go out to do a service, will it be okay to go out and pray to Krishna to protect us, or is it putting Krishna to our service?
Well, you take precaution. If there's something that's needed, you don't kick the bucket. You, if it's needed, it's needed. And if it's not needed, it's not needed. I mean, you have to go buy groceries. And if it's needed, you go buy groceries. And you take precautions when you're going to buy groceries.
Kasturi Manjari Mataji has two more questions. One is from the Tattenu Kampam verse. At what stage of devotional life one comes to the state of accepting everything as one's karmic reaction? I feel at mind level, I accept. But when some application time comes, I whine and complain.
So you practice. That's at what point? It's by mature practice. It becomes your experience instead of just practice.
Her second question is, perceiving the super soul in one's heart and seeing Krishna in the heart, as we hear Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela, are these two same? So she's asking, perceiving or seeing Krishna in the heart and the Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela, are these two same?
Are they two the same?
Yeah.
They may take you to the same place, but the statements are different. They may take you to the same place, but the statements are different. I think we're going to end. Boys, you've been very patient. And I thank you for being so patient. Let me ask you, what's your older boy's name?
Prem.
Prem?
Prem Kishan.
Prem Kishan.
Prem Kishan.
I'm going to ask you a question. Do you know who is Lord Brahma?
Who?
Lord B-R-A-H-M-A, Brahma. Brahma.
Yes.
You know? Tell me one thing that you know about Lord Brahma. One thing.
He has a flower.
He?
Has a flower.
Has a flower? Okay. Okay. What else does he have? He has beads. He chants mantra. And he has scripture because he is the first born living being and he manifests the Vedas in this world for us. That's Brahma. So he has flower, he has mantra beads, and he has scripture. Okay? Does he have one head or more than one head?
More than one head.
He has four heads, right?
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Firstborn living being, Lord Brahma. And What's unique about how he was born? How was Lord Brahma born?
I don't know.
He was born on a lotus. He was born on a lotus, remember?
I never saw that.
You never saw that. We'll show you a picture later. Born on a lotus. That was pretty cool. I mean, born on a lotus. You've seen a lotus before, right? Yeah. You've seen pictures of a lotus. Flower that grows out of the water. Lotus flower grows out of the water. So, he was born on a lotus. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.